This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Thanks so much for hanging out with me, giving me a little bit of your precious time to continue our food as medicine series here on the podcast. I think we all know that food absolutely has the ability to make us feel great, make us feel terrible. Food has the ability to address health challenges, right? Certain foods can help us with inflammation. Certain foods can help us with energy or with focus. And today we are talking about ginger. Ginger's not a root. Did you know that? Even though we call it ginger root, not a root, looks like root, but it's not a root. So we've done this food as medicine series a few times now. I'm going to link to the past episodes if you've missed any of them. I'll link to them over on the show notes page. So you can find the show notes right on primalpotential.com. On the homepage, there is a tab that says podcast. When you click that, you go to the show notes. And it wasn't always this way, but for at least, I would say, the last 100 or so episodes, the show notes can be found at primalpotential.com/ the episode number. So today, for example, the show notes can be found at primalpotential.com/503. When the podcast first started, it would be like the episode number and then a description of the episode. So it might be, you know, 101 breakfast, 103 cravings, right? So it didn't always used to be the URL slash episode number, but it has been for a while now. But if you aren't sure, the search function on primalpotential.com works pretty well. So if you're looking for episodes on cravings or on breakfast or on carbohydrates, you can just go to primalpotential.com and use the search function. That'll always help. But I will link to our past food as medicine episodes over on the show notes page, primalpotential.com/503. In episode 450, we talked about coconut. In 458, we talked about turmeric, and ginger, which we're talking about today, has a lot in common with turmeric, not just in how it looks, but also in how it functions in the body. In episode 466, we talked about sulfur and sulfur-containing foods like broccoli or Brussels sprouts. And in 476, we talked about Brazil nuts. Today, like I said, we are talking about ginger. Before we dive into that, I want to remind you guys, it's been a little bit since I've shared this reminder with you, the waitlist for the fall 12 weeks to transformation is open. And the waitlist does not mean that the fall group is full. The fall group is empty. It hasn't opened up yet. What the waitlist is for is for people who want the first chance at the fall group. So the fall group is not full. It starts in September. Late September. Registration will open late August or early September, but it opens first to the waitlist. So getting on the waitlist for the fall 2018 12 weeks to transformation group means that you get the first shot at a spot in those 12 weeks. You can get on the waitlist by going to the show notes page for today's episode, primalpotential.com/503. Under resources, there will be a link, or you can just go to the Work With Me page on primalpotential.com and you'll see it there as well. If you want to know more about the 12 weeks to transformation, listen to episode 468. That has a lot of information, the pricing, all of that kind of stuff. I will be putting out more information on the fall group as it gets closer. We still have a couple of months. But in the meantime, listen to episode 468 if you want to know a little bit more. Ginger. I love ginger, but beyond the flavor, I want to talk about some of the ways that it can function with medicinal effects. From a big picture standpoint, a couple of things that I want everybody to get on the same page about right out of the gate. Ginger helps with digestive stuff anything from nausea, which we tend to associate with drinks like ginger ale, but ginger itself, the whole food ginger, not the highly processed ginger in ginger ale or ginger flavors that we see in ginger ale, really helps with nausea, but also bloating and indigestion, anything in that GI realm. But there's also a lot of information about how ginger is a powerful antioxidant. We're going to talk about what exactly that means and why it's important, as well as some other benefits related to cellular health, related to inflammation, related to joint pain. I want to make sure that none of us lose sight of this very important thing, which is ginger's not a big rock. When I say big rocks, I am referring to the things that really make a difference in terms of our results. So when we're talking about something like fat loss, the big rocks are going to be what you eat, how much you eat, and when you eat. Things like the golden rules of carbs and fat loss, which I talk about in episode 195. But something like, say, apple cider vinegar is not a big rock for fat loss. That's a small rock. Same thing with sugar-free gum. Sure, we can talk about artificial sweeteners all day long, but is chewing sugar-free gum a big rock in the scheme of fat loss? Nope, it's not. And somebody asked me the other day related to apple cider vinegar, which I think might have been episode 144. I'm going to link to it over in the show notes, or you can just go to primalpotential.com and search apple cider vinegar if you want to hear more about that. But somebody reached out to me about that episode and said, how important is apple cider vinegar for fat loss, for health? And my answer was, not very. And I'd say the same thing about ginger. Honestly, I'd say the same thing about just about any of these food as medicine focus foods. The reason being, they can make a positive impact, sure, but they don't make the biggest impact. A lot of people here have the goal of either fat loss or improving their body composition, improving their health. And the reality is the biggest thing that moves the needle is not ginger, is not sulfur-containing foods or Brazil nuts or anything like that. It's eating real quality food, not eating too much of it, minimizing processed foods, moving our bodies, eating when we're hungry but not eating when we're not, minimizing stress, getting enough sleep. Those are the big rocks. And if you aren't there yet, give your energy to those things instead of, oh my gosh, I need to go buy ginger root. Oh my gosh, I need to make something with ginger tonight. Absolutely, ginger can have a beneficial effect, but it is not the big rock. Just want to make sure everybody is clear on that before we dive into it. So ginger, I mentioned a couple minutes ago, it's not a root. Ginger is actually an herb. It is grown primarily in and around Southeast Asia. And I don't want to get caught too much in the nuance because it really doesn't matter if you say ginger root or you say, oh, it's not a root, it's an herb. That doesn't really matter so much. But I do think it's fun to kind of know what we're talking about. The part of the ginger that we consume and use as a food product comes from the stem, which is often referred to as the root. The stem, the part that we consume and often call the root, isn't the root, but it is the part from which the roots grow. And it has been used for thousands of years for medicinal purposes. So this is absolutely nothing new. And that strong smell that we associate with ginger comes from a compound very appropriately called gingerols. So ginger, like the word with O-L-S at the end, those are the compounds, and there's many different kinds of gingerols, like over 30. It is responsible for that pungent smell, but also responsible for the majority of the health benefits of ginger. That's often the case. The things that make something smell really strong, whether that's garlic or it's cabbage or it's onion, that is often the thing that delivers, the compound that delivers the majority of the health benefits. Gingerols, the compounds within ginger that are responsible for its strong smell and also responsible for a lot of these benefits, are in the same chemical family as, think of it as cousins to capsaicin and piperin. Capsaicin is the compound that gives heat, spice, to peppers, and piperin is what gives black pepper its bite, its pungent flavor. Gingerols give ginger its spiciness. And there is something that happens that transforms these gingerols. They act differently whether they have been cooked or not cooked. So raw ginger is going to have a slightly different effect than mildly heated ginger versus totally cooked or dehydrated ginger. So when we cook ginger, it transforms the gingerol into a different form, and that cooked form is less strong. It doesn't have the same bite that you would experience if you were to, say, grate or zest some raw ginger. And interestingly, when we dry ginger, we dehydrate it, or we just mildly heat it compared with cooking it, it actually gets more pungent. So cooking it dials down that bite, but dehydrating it actually expands it. So dried ginger is going to be stronger in flavor, a bit more spicy, if you want to call it that. That's the way I think of, but not spicy hot, spicy, like ginger. So the gingerols are giving ginger its spiciness, and depending on how the ginger root, or ginger, we'll call it the root, but that horizontal section from which, I didn't realize it wasn't a root until I started preparing for this episode. I always call it ginger root too, because it looks like a root. It looks like a tuber, but it's not. Anyway, but the part that we naturally consume is the part that really has the majority of the flavor. There is a difference. I want to make sure everybody hears this. In any food, there is a difference in the nutrients in raw form versus the nutrients in cooked form. And this is something to keep in mind. I mean, we talked about how the gingerols change whether it's dehydrated or heated versus raw. But the reality is that for all foods, whether we're talking about spinach or we're talking about garlic, or we're talking about Brussels sprouts. I know we talked about the sulfur changes with cooking in the Food is Medicine sulfur episode. Again, I'll link that up over in the show notes. But it's important to remember that there is a difference in the nutrient composition as well as the bioavailability of nutrients based on whether the food is cooked versus raw. And it varies from food to food. So sometimes raw means more nutrient density, less, whereas cooking can denature or inactivate some of the nutrients, but often the reverse is true. So we have to look at the way that different foods respond to cooked versus raw. This is not a big rock. I don't want people thinking, oh my gosh, well, is it better for me to cook my spinach or to eat it raw? The reality is it's going to be different food to food. It is not the biggest rock. The biggest rock is going to be the quality of the food you eat, when you eat, how much you eat, etc. But it is something to keep in mind that there is a difference from food to food between the nutrient density and the bioavailability of the nutrients based on how it is prepared, if it's in raw form or if it's in cooked form. All right, ginger has been widely researched, and I would say that the research is generally speaking on the uptick for ginger. For a long time, it was just anecdotal. I mentioned that it's been used for thousands of years for things like nausea or gastric issues, and so that continued just based on anecdote. So somebody's grandmother used ginger for nausea, and that just continued, but without scientific research. Now it's really transitioning into more research in both animals as well as in humans and in cell cultures. I want to reiterate, as I try to do every time we talk about research, there is a difference between what is proven in animal studies and what is proven in human studies. We can see a ton of research done in rats and in mice, and it suggests a potential role or impact in humans, but humans and mice, humans and rats are very, very different. So we cannot look at a rat study or a mouse study and conclude that the effect observed in those animals is going to translate over into humans. That is just not the case. Certainly sometimes it happens that way, but oftentimes it does not. And most research does begin in animal models or in cell culture models. Sometimes those are human cells that just live like in a petri dish and are treated with something. But that also is not the same thing as actual human clinical studies with people that are alive and going about their lives. I don't want to discount animal studies. I just think it's important to understand that an effect observed in an animal is not the same thing and will not always cross over in the same way into humans. With that said, human studies are not the be-all, end-all either. There are a lot of human studies, and we talked about this as it relates to, I believe, coconut oil. When there came some controversy, gosh, I don't even know, maybe it was a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that, about coconut oil, and is coconut oil actually bad for you? And all of us are going nuts by having coconut oil. We looked at human studies that drew conclusions that were straight up wrong because the studies weren't well designed. So as we talk about the research, I just want everyone to keep those things in mind, that animal conclusions do not always translate into human studies. And even when a human study proves something, that does not mean the study drew the right conclusions or was designed properly, conducted properly, etc. What I like to do, especially when it comes to food as medicine concepts like ginger, which we're talking about today, what's true for me? Because there can be a bazillion human clinical studies that say ginger has an effect on nausea, but when I consume ginger, it doesn't help my nausea. Well, that to me means more than all the data, because it can be true for a million other people, but if it's not true for me, it's not true for me. So I want you to consider that as we have this discussion about ginger, because as you will see, some of the suggested benefits of ginger are inconclusive, means that some studies show that it has an impact on reducing inflammation in the body, and other studies show, no, it doesn't. So what I would challenge you to do is ask, well, does it make a difference for me? What does my body say? If I have some joint pain and I start having ginger tea, not some highly processed tea bag, but hot water with grated ginger steeped in it, do I notice an effect? Yes or no? That is going to be far more beneficial. But it's also important to mention that a lot of the research is consistent and conclusive. So we'll talk about what has been well documented and substantiated and what hasn't been. Again, though, what matters most is what is true for you. In all of the models that we'll look at, animals, cells, humans, research has shown consistently that ginger has an impact on reducing nausea. That is very well documented, as well as other GI issues, whether that's indigestion or it's bloating or it's vomiting. Ginger has been shown across the board to have a positive impact there. Again, though, doesn't mean it has one for you, so use your body to give you those answers for you. Other areas of research related to medicinal properties of ginger are around inflammation, which I mentioned, as well as cancer, cell death, inducing cell death in unhealthy cells, arthritis. All of those things and more have been looked at in various clinical studies. From the food as medicine perspective, we can check the box of ginger being a great aid in nausea. But what I want to emphasize, or really, I guess more appropriately, suggest, Can we please move away from ginger ale? Yes, ginger can help settle an upset stomach, no doubt, but ginger ale is highly processed and does not reflect the compound, the whole food, ginger. Whether we're talking about ginger ale with tons of sugar or ginger ale with artificial sweeteners, please, can we just embrace ginger, the herb, the whole food? And we will talk about some ways to enjoy that in its whole food form. So these GI benefits, this nausea-reducing aid of ginger, comes from gingerol, which I mentioned a few minutes ago. And one of the things that gingerol, the bioactive compound in ginger, one of the things it does is it helps to stimulate digestive enzymes, which help us to break down the food that we have eaten. The other thing that it does is, and this is because of the essential oils naturally present in the whole food known as ginger, they help to produce bile. Bile aids in the metabolism of fats. And these essential oils naturally found in ginger help to protect the stomach lining. So that totality of factors is going to give you these GI benefits. But again, in the whole food form. When we talk about extracts, whether it is a tea bag or it is a powdered ginger that you get in the spice aisle, it's extracting some, but not all, of the compounds that we find when we just buy ginger, the little thing that looks a lot like turmeric, except it's lighter in color when you peel it, a light yellow versus a bright orange. Turmeric's more bright orange. There are naturally occurring other compounds in addition to the essential oils that deliver some of these health benefits. So it's not just the gingerols, the most common bioactive in ginger, but it is the combination of all of the things that naturally come with ginger, which is why I really want to encourage whole food versus other extracts and preparations. That's one of the reasons that I'm saying, can we please move past ginger ale? Because what that doesn't have are these essential oils, which really help. In addition to the GI side of things, ginger is an antioxidant, which means that it quenches free radicals. Ginger has a very high antioxidant capacity, which a lot of, say, fruits do, and some vegetables do. But ginger's pretty high up there on the list. Berries are higher, pomegranates are higher, but ginger is higher in its antioxidant capacity than a lot of vegetables are. I want to pause here for a second, because what I imagine is, if I asked all of you, why exactly do we need antioxidants? What do they do? I'm not sure that most of us, in layman's language, could explain it. And this was something most of you know, that before I started Primal Potential, I worked in the dietary supplement industry. And one of my primary roles was to make sure that our customers knew what the product did. Not just, oh, the news says vitamin D is all the rage, so I should go buy vitamin D. But why? What is it going to do for me? And I think when we understand that, we are more likely to implement it as part of our normal day to day. So I think lots of people are missing the mark on what antioxidants are, why we need them, the role that they play in our body. So we're just going to take just a minute and make sure we're all on the same page there. You know how when your car runs, I think this will be a good analogy. When your car runs, it produces and releases exhaust. And that exhaust is a natural byproduct. It doesn't mean that something's wrong with the car, but just as a result of it running, it produces and releases waste or toxins, the chemical byproducts of your car running. Your body does that too. As a result of normal, healthy, day-to-day operations, your body functioning, it produces exhaust. And one of the things we call this exhaust, or a similar way of thinking about it, this waste, is free radicals. Free radicals are this exhaust of the body. And basically what they are is unstable, very, very highly unstable molecules naturally produced as a byproduct of normal living and functioning. We can also, in addition to producing them just by living, they are in the air because of pollution or in the water, things like that. So we're taking them on as well as generating them ourselves. And these highly unstable molecules in our body, they actually create more instability. So they are highly unstable. And in an attempt to stabilize themselves, they go around stealing electrons from other stable molecules in your body. So while they are highly unstable, the real risk, the threat that they pose, comes from the fact that they go around the body stealing electrons, and as they do that, they create more unstable things. So they've stabilized themselves, but what they've done is started a chain reaction of instability in the body. No bueno. The result of that is what you might have heard of referred to as oxidative damage or oxidative stress. And it takes many forms. Skin wrinkling is one manifestation of this oxidative stress. But so is cancer. So is degenerative brain diseases like Alzheimer's, heart disease, big stuff. Results from this chain reaction of instability that was catalyzed by a free radical. So antioxidants come into the picture. Think about that word for a second. Anti, against, oxidant. They are protecting against oxidation, these antioxidants. They put out the fire, if you will, of oxidative stress by extinguishing or neutralizing these free radicals. That's why you might have heard of antioxidants referred to as free radical scavengers. Antioxidants, when we consume them from things like ginger, they neutralize the free radicals so they can't cause that ripple effect, that domino effect, that chain reaction of instability that generates oxidative stress. Antioxidants find these free radicals and they neutralize them by donating an extra electron to them so they become stable and they no longer have to steal electrons from other things, creating this ripple effect and increasing destabilization throughout the body. All that to say, ginger is a powerful antioxidant. And I think that aside, that understanding why this is important is critical, because then we can understand the need to consume antioxidants. So back to ginger and other benefits of ginger. We've talked about the GI stuff from nausea, indigestion, bloating, antioxidants. The next one was new to me in my research for this episode. And I gotta say, I made myself a note because I am going to see if this is true for my body. Again, it's not enough for me to know that it's true in research. Is it true for me is really what I care about. And that is, it has been shown, ginger has been shown to reduce pain associated with menstrual cramps more than muscle relaxing techniques. So when groups were compared, one group suffering from menstrual cramps went through muscle relaxation techniques, another group consumed ginger. The group consuming ginger had a greater relief of their menstrual cramps than the group doing muscle relaxation techniques. And interestingly, I find muscle relaxation techniques like deep breathing or meditation and stretching and exercise to be really helpful for menstrual cramps. So I'm excited to add ginger to the mix, and I'll tell you how I incorporate ginger here once we get through some of the other benefits to it, or proposed benefits that we need to evaluate more for ourselves or give a little bit more time to the research related to. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But yeah, reduction of menstrual cramping. Pretty pumped about that. Where was that when I was like obsessed with Aleve all through high school? I try not to take things like Aleve or aspirin or ibuprofen. I just feel better when I'm not introducing those kinds of things. in part two, I want to make sure that I'm not muting my body's signals. You know, sometimes if we take a pain reliever and hey, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm talking about my own perspective on menstrual cramps. If you need to take something for pain, you do you. You do you all day long. But one thing I always try to keep in mind is pain is a signal from my body. So something that is chemically created versus whole food like ginger meant to block that signaling of pain, oftentimes it doesn't eliminate the pain. It just blocks the signal of the pain when we're talking about over-the-counter things or prescription medications. I want my body to be able to communicate with me, but I also, when it comes to menstrual cramps, want to be able to function and live my life without being miserable. And so if I can incorporate ginger instead of feeling desperate enough to turn to Aleve, I'm going to be pretty excited about that. Kind of related to muscle cramping, there is a lot of research looking at the impact of ginger on inflammation and things like pain associated with arthritis. And there is a lot of research suggesting that ginger does have a beneficial effect on inflammation as well as arthritis in animals. So we want to look at this as suggestive, but not necessarily conclusive as it relates to humans. There are human clinical studies on the role of ginger on inflammation and arthritis, but it is a mixed bag. Some of the research suggests that it's not any better than placebo. Other research suggests that it shows a positive effect. The good news is there isn't clinical studies that are showing that in any way it causes damage or it exacerbates inflammation or increases pain, which would be a very important thing to consider as well. Again, look at this for yourself. When I was thinking about this, remember I said that ginger is kind of a kissing cousin to turmeric, and it works in a lot of the similar ways, and no surprise, it looks very similar and it's in the same family. And the turmeric research is very conclusive about its role reducing inflammation. So from that perspective, I can see that it would make sense that it would have a role. And I'm excited. I haven't been a big ginger user up until this point, but I am going to be incorporating it more regularly. And again, I'm going to tell you how I'm going to do that. And I'm excited to see if it has a role on inflammation for me. So consider that for yourself. I am interested in ginger personally, even with the mixed bag of research on inflammation and arthritis, as well as we'll talk in a second about the mixed bag of research on cancer. I'm interested in it first and foremost because I love the flavor. If you hate ginger, don't sweat it. There are a million other foods out there with powerful health-promoting effects. Eat what you love. So let that be one of the primary drivers of decisions you make about what foods to incorporate. Another reason, in addition to the fact that I love the flavor, it's a known antioxidant. And a lot of the foods that are very rich in antioxidants, like berries, I don't eat a lot of berries. I don't eat a lot of those very high antioxidant foods. I don't drink a lot of wine, which is also can be pretty high in antioxidants. So this is a good alternative for me. And I'm just like, hey, I have inflammation. We all do, but especially as part of helping me recover from my workouts and keeping me healthy as maybe I don't get enough sleep or I'm fighting an illness or something like that. Why not? It's not going to hurt based on what I believe the research shows, and I welcome you to do your own research. It's the amazing thing about being alive in 2018. We can really find that. So my thing is certainly not going to hurt me, and if it does, my body will let me know, and I really like it. It's easy. It's inexpensive. I'll toss it in pretty effortlessly with some of the ways that I use turmeric. Back to food as medicine, impact of ginger. One growing area of research that I think we'll continue to learn a lot about is around the impact of ginger on cancer development. Most studies or most research begins by looking at the effect in animals and in cell cultures. And that was very true here with ginger and cancer. And the studies do look promising. Something that we see in the animal studies and the cell culture studies is that ginger induces cell death, known as apoptosis, in cancer cells. So it identifies the unhealthy cells and it triggers them to kill themselves off. And it also suggests that it can slow and stop the growth of tumors. And it's looking at different types of cancers, and all types of cancers work differently. So we don't just want to like broadly say cancer in general. The studies indicate different types of cancer, especially colorectal cancer, and looked at breast cancer. But there will be some types of cancer that you wouldn't see this effect. There are similar effects seen in human cell studies. So those first couple that I mentioned, the couple of effects in terms of apoptosis, were seen in animal and cell cultures, but we see the same thing when we're looking not just at animals, but also human cell studies, which is different from studies in actual people, right? Human cell studies are different from true human sample studies. The results are suggestive of this effect, but they are not yet conclusive. And I want to really emphasize that. One thing to keep in mind, though, is one thing that is well substantiated is the antioxidant effect. And antioxidants naturally help to protect against cancers because this ripple effect, the chain effect, the damage caused by free radicals is part of the initiation of cancer. So even when we might say that the studies are inconclusive as to whether or not ginger is going to have an effect on shrinking tumors or things like that, reducing the number of tumors, we can say that as an antioxidant, it absolutely does have a cancer protective effect just from that perspective. There are conclusive animal studies suggesting a beneficial role of ginger on diabetes, as well as asthma and respiratory conditions, and decreasing arterial plaque buildup. But the human studies aren't as conclusive as the animal studies, which could be in part because of their design. And doing human studies is a lot more challenging because there's confounding factors, like what else are they eating, right? We can supplement somebody with ginger, we can add ginger to their diet, but it's a lot trickier to do a real, true, quality human study as it relates to food because there's so many moving parts. It's easy to say, well, there were confounding variables. So the bottom line here is there is a possible benefit of ginger on these things like respiratory conditions and cardiovascular disease, but we're just not sure. And I think that's okay. Sometimes we're not going to be sure. Let's talk about how to incorporate ginger. And I want to reiterate that, like we talked about in the turmeric episode, there is so much merit to using actual ginger, not a glass jar of powdered ginger or ginger flavored anything. It's just not the same thing because ginger in its whole food form naturally has other compounds that support its bioavailability and deliver other health benefits. So important to remember. So as we talk about ways to incorporate, know that I am talking about going to the grocery store, buying ginger in the produce section, usually next to the turmeric. It's going to have a brownish gray peel on the outside that you peel off. And as you peel it, you'll see that the flesh on the inside is kind of stringy and a light yellow color. Don't make the mistake that I've made before of buying turmeric and then using it thinking it's going to taste like ginger. While those two look the same, they sure don't taste the same. So let me share a couple of ways that I've used ginger and plan to use ginger more often. Number one, tea. This is simple and it doesn't involve a tea bag. What I do, I have one of those little metal tea balls that you put loose tea in so that you don't have an actual tea bag. But instead of putting loose tea in there, I will put fresh ground ginger and fresh ground turmeric, and I'll just drop that tea ball into my cup of hot water, and it's sort of like homemade tea. So there's that. Another way is incorporating it into recipes. And just yesterday, as of when this will air, I sent out a recipe on the VIP email list for a chicken marinade that actually didn't include ginger. But in preparing for this episode, I thought, oh, it would be even better with fresh ground ginger. So the recipe that I emailed out for the chicken marinade included coconut aminos, which are a lot like soy sauce, but don't have soy, aren't as salty, and the flavor is a little bit more mild. I get them from Thrive Market. So that marinade was coconut aminos, fresh garlic, sesame oil, and sesame seeds. Adding some fresh ground ginger to that would be amazing because it's kind of an Asian-inspired flavor profile, and adding the ginger would just brighten it up a little bit, and I think that would be such a good combination. I used it as a marinade for chicken that I threw on the grill, but this would also make a really good salad dressing. However, if you use it as a salad dressing, I would keep the oil to coconut aminos ratio closer to 1:1. It was way heavier on the coconut aminos, way lighter on the oil as a marinade. Okay, another way that I have used ginger and plan to use it more often is in mocktails. I personally don't drink a lot of alcohol, but instead of a mocktail is a cocktail-like beverage without the alcohol. And there are a few reasons that I don't drink a lot of alcohol. First and foremost, I am most satisfied when I eat my calories, not when I drink them. Second, I feel best without alcohol. And third, it is a little too easy for me to justify brownies after a couple of glasses of wine in ways that I wouldn't be tempted to do without the wine. But at the same time, sometimes it's nice to just have a special drink, something other than water or coffee or tea. And I can genuinely feel like I'm indulging a little bit with a mocktail. And there are some things that make a mocktail taste like it has alcohol in it. One way to do that is kombucha. Just be careful because a lot of kombucha has a lot of sugar in it. There's really only one type of kombucha that I'll drink, and the brand is Kavita, and the flavor is lemon cayenne. And I drink that because it has almost no sugar in it. The rest have a lot more than I personally want to drink. So adding kombucha to a mocktail is one way to make it kind of taste like it has alcohol. Apple cider vinegar is another way, because it's fermented, that it makes the mocktail feel more like a cocktail. And I think ginger can as well, because it has a little bit of a bite, kind of the same type of bite that you would get if you were consuming liquor. So if I was going to make a mocktail and I wanted to include ginger, here's what I would do. And my mocktails never contain juice because I don't want the sugar. I usually start with a can of sparkling water. LaCroix is the brand, LaCroix, tomato, tomato. That's the brand I buy most often, but not exclusively. So what I would probably do is pick any flavor of sparkling water that you want, and then I would grate in a little bit of fresh ginger. And what goes very well with ginger? A little lime and some mint, and muddle it together. So you can also add a splash of apple cider vinegar for a little bit of that fermented kick to it that'll make it taste like, in fact, I bet a lot of people tasting it for the first time, if you didn't tell them, wouldn't realize that it doesn't have alcohol in it. So seltzer, splash of apple cider vinegar to your tolerance, a little bit of lime juice, like just squeeze a lime, not from like a bottle, muddled with some mint and some fresh ginger. I want to hear from those of you that try that, or tag me on Instagram at Elizabeth Benton. If you're curious about apple cider vinegar, listen to episode 144, and I will link to that over in the show notes for today's episode as well. I buy Bragg's brand apple cider vinegar. It's organic. It has the mother in it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, not going to go into it today, but it's in episode 144. So that's what I do there. Or if you don't want the mocktail style drink, but more of like a hot, creamier, more indulgent beverage, you can modify the golden milk concept to include ginger. So golden milk is a turmeric, kind of like a latte almost, milk and turmeric. It's spicy, not too sweet, but just add a little ginger. I don't have a recipe for you. You can probably find a million on the internet. Just stay away from the ones with sugar. If I were making it, I probably wouldn't follow a recipe because I'm just not much of a recipe girl. I would throw some coconut milk into a pot on the stove. Coconut milk, not from the refrigerator section with the milks, but coconut milk from a can, like in the ethnic foods aisle of your grocery store, or I get mine from Thrive Market because it's easier and I can get it organic and I can't always find organic at the grocery store and it's much less expensive. So that's where I get my coconut milk, Thrive Market. So what I would do is put some coconut milk in a pot on the stove with some turmeric and some grated ginger and maybe a little bit of stevia just to get a touch of sweetness in there, and cinnamon. Cinnamon would be good too. And if you wanted to eliminate any of the pulp from grating the ginger, because it can be a little bit pulpy, not as pulpy as say orange juice, but just a little bit, throw it in the blender after it's hot. Yum, yum. And don't forget about pickled ginger. Not for the turmeric milk, golden milk thing, but for like with sushi or sashimi, pickled ginger. I buy pickled ginger because sometimes it's intended with sushi to be a palate cleanser, of course, but a lot of people just put it on top of their sushi. I do that sometimes too because it's just a nice flavor contrast. But I keep a jar of organic pickled ginger in my fridge a lot of the times just as a palate cleanser. If you feel like you want a little something in your mouth, maybe to clear the dinner flavors out of your mouth. I don't know, for whatever reason, just because pickled ginger is delicious. How about that? I get it from Thrive Market as well. The brand, I'm trying to see the bottle in my head right now. I get it from Thrive Market. The brand is the Ginger People. That's what it is. It's an organic pickled ginger. I get it online through Thrive Market. The brand is the Ginger People. If you want to give Thrive Market a try and get any of those things, the coconut milk, the apple cider vinegar, the pickled ginger, make sure you register through thrivemarket.com/primalpotential, because when you do, you save an extra 25% on your first order and you get a free 30-day trial membership. So I will link to that over on the show notes for today's episode, thrivemarket.com/primalpotential. Be really wary of any ginger flavored anything. Like, please don't get all excited next time you see ginger candy because you're like, oh, I heard on a podcast this is really good for you. The closer we can stay to the real whole food form, the better. And anytime sugar is added, use caution, dial back. When we talk about things like ginger tea, it's not gonna hurt, but it's not going to deliver the same nutrient density as ginger in its whole food form. All right, that's that. I want to wrap up like we have been the past few episodes with a meal that I've loved over the past few days, as well as a workout that I've loved over the past few days. And if you were on the VIP email list, you might have already heard about this particular meal that I loved. I made this super great summer salad, and I had it along with a grilled steak. So the summer salad, the recipe went out to the VIP email list, was nectarine, fresh basil, fresh mozzarella, and heirloom cherry tomatoes drizzled with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and salt. I'm not a big fruit eater, but especially in the summer when it's really hot and I feel a little bit more dehydrated, I'm drawn to those colder foods with a higher water density. Oh, I'll totally enjoy maybe once or twice a week a piece of fruit in the evening following those golden rules of carbs and fat loss that I talk about in episode 195. But yeah, super simple summer salad of just nectarine, fresh basil, fresh mozzarella, fresh tomatoes. Did I say basil? Yes, I said basil. Yeah, so all chopped up, drizzled with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and some salt. So good. If you're not on the VIP email list and you missed that email, make sure you go to primalpotential.com/join so you can get on that free VIP email list. And the workout recently that I loved, it was super short, but it sucked. It was hard. It was a 5-minute AMRAP, which means as many rounds as possible in 5 minutes of 5 calories on the assault bike. If you've never been on an assault bike, it is not the same thing as a stationary bike. It is a special level of torture. That's why it's called the assault bike. So as many rounds as possible in 5 minutes of 5 calories on the assault bike and 4 burpee box jump overs. So you do a burpee, jump up and over the box, do another burpee, up and over the box 4 times. Repeat that as many times as possible in 5 minutes, then rest 2 minutes and do it all over again. As many rounds as possible in 5 minutes of 5 cals on the assault bike, 4 burpee box jump overs. Whew, it was rough, but it was really good. And I was glad I did it once it was over. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I will chat with you very soon. Talk to you later.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Primal Potential Podcast, where my goal is not to inform you, but to transform you. And if you would like to receive free motivation and strategy and recipes, workouts, meal ideas every week right to your inbox, just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. It's a great way to get the tools, the strategies, and the practical implementation assistance that you need to create your own transformation between podcast episodes. Just text the word PRIMAL to the number 44222 or go to primalpotential.com/join. See you there.